Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sean. It is Tuesday, June 28th, 2016. Happy birthday to my mom. I love you. And it is episode number 6 of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. Tonight on the show, discussions all about Battleground coming up in July and the WWE draft. As always, we will cover WWE news and rumors and everything in between. And now, live from outside in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, on with the show and the host with the most, it's Big T.
Thank you very much, Sean. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 6 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. We are here today with a jam-packed episode. And hope everybody out there is doing well and enjoying the show tonight. I'm outside just enjoying the summer weather. Why not? It doesn't hurt. But, wow, big week in news and everything. And, you know, before I get started, you know, and we dive in on the Battleground talk, all that good stuff, I'm going to give you my little opening thought of the week, so to speak. And, you know, I'm going to talk about, actually a little bit about UFC and CM Punk's debut at, UFC 203 in my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. But, looking very forward to it. I got my tickets to be at the queue live while witnessing this history-making event of CM Punk taking, you know, going inside the ring, in the octagon for the first time. Not to mention watching Fabricio Werdum and Ben Rothwell in a co-main event. That'll probably be for the number one contendership to face whoever the world champion is. And that leaves the main event. You got the hometown boy, Stipe Miocic, the UFC World Heavyweight Champion, going up against the challenger, Alistair Overeem. And Alistair Overeem, here's a little fun fact about him. He was actually Brock Lesnar's last opponent in the UFC. And now we got Brock Lesnar coming back to the UFC, you know, for UFC 200 to fight Mark Hunt. That's just coming around the corner, you know, July 9th. But going back to UFC 203, you know, I got my tickets to sit here at this history-making event. And honestly, I was going to see the title match, and the morning of the pre-sale when the news broke that CM Punk was going to face Mickey Gall, just incredible stuff. I couldn't be happier because I remember saying, wow, you know, when CM Punk, you know, makes his debut, I would love to be there for that fight, and it just so happened I got lucky, and I'm going to get to witness this fight in my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. I can't wait. I cannot wait, people. And the event is already sold out. I mean, the queue, the Quicken Loans Arena, the home of the NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers, that place is going to be rocking for this event. And I'm actually thinking that I'm going to do special coverage for it, even though, you know, it's a wild way to talk about. That's why I wanted to do this monologue. I think I'm going to do special coverage for it, like maybe a prediction show on a few of the fights. You know, maybe do a review show and talk about my experiences. I mean, this is going to be a history-making event. One of the biggest UFC cards of this calendar year, all taking place in Cleveland. I couldn't be happier. And, you know, not to mention, we have WWE SmackDown coming on September 27th. I mean, incredible stuff. SmackDown September 27th. Tickets haven't gone on sale yet, so I'm going to plan on going to that too. And this UFC is September 10th. So a lot of big things happening in Cleveland, not to mention the championship win and so many things, you know, that have just been going on for the city. It's great. It really is great. And could not be happier to be a Cleveland fan, be a WWE fan, a UFC fan. We're getting the attention right now. And Cleveland is definitely a city on the rise, and it's a great place to be. So Watch out for my extensive UFC 203 coverage coming in September. That should be fun.
And that will definitely be a exciting time to be a Clevelander.
Yes, it definitely is, Sean. Definitely. I mean,
how do you say it? A Clevedonian, a Clevelander?
I use the term Clevelander, and that's what I've heard other residents use. So we're Clevelanders here.
And you got WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump set to receive the Republican nomination there in just a couple weeks.
Yep, I'm excited for that to see Donald Trump up in here in Cleveland. I'll be watching on TV because the convention sold out like blink of an eye. So can't make it to the convention, but definitely be watching on TV.
All right. So, what's on your mind about Battleground so far? You know, we're about 4 weeks away here. How's Battleground shaping up in the long run?
Oh, wow. Battleground shaping up in the long run. I'll tell you one thing about Battleground. I'm just sending a quick message to one of our buddies here. But Battleground. What do I see? What was your question? How do I see it going, or how do I see it shaping up?
Yeah, what's on your mind about it?
You know, Battleground, what's been on my mind with it is I think, you know, we're going to get to see a big match, obviously, with the Shield Triple Threat. We're going to get to see another big match with Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, John Cena, AJ Styles. So we're going to see a few really great things. But the one problem is it doesn't feel right to me. It really doesn't. Battleground is a B-level pay-per-view that, you know, normally really doesn't deliver or hammer it all the way home, so to speak, you know? Because Battleground is not that premier event that WWE fans just, you know, they clamor to see it, you know, like a WrestleMania or SummerSlam. So it's like I feel like all of these great matches are coming like a month too early, and I just don't know if they're going to be, like the card is looking epic, but I don't see how, you know, these matches are going to play out to be, you know, incredibly epic. I think it's going to leave us, you know, wanting more. It's going to leave us something missing. I feel like they're rushing the booking to death, and it's all because of the draft. They just want to get these matches in. They want to get these matches done. They're not, you know, really taking time to build on it. I mean, even Roman Reigns now being out for 30 days, he's not going to be involved in any sense of the build whatsoever. And I don't know, I'm excited for it, but yet I'm deathly afraid that WWE is going to completely screw this up and send this in a downward spiral. If you ask me, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it definitely seems like Battleground's getting the, Battleground's being treated like the redheaded stepchild, if you will, to this whole draft thing.
Yeah, you know, it's like, do you see this helping Battleground, though? I mean, yeah, if they deliver a great, solid card and they make these matches as good as we know they can be. See, we know how good these matches can be, but will they give it to us? Will they give it to us, or are they just gonna basically half-ass everything? Like, you know, here, we're giving you these matches before the draft. You're only paying $9.99 for the network. This isn't SummerSlam or WrestleMania, Survivor Series, or Royal Rumble, so just here. You know, and they're gonna throw it in our lap.
Well, I don't know, because Extreme Rules was pretty decent for being, Money in the Bank, I really enjoyed. But, you know, that was billed as the best Money in the Bank of all time, so they really had to deliver or they would have been, you know, made fools of. But I think with Battleground, just like last year's Battleground, we didn't get a conclusive ending. We had, you know, Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, and The Undertaker interfered, I believe, or no.
Oh, Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, The Undertaker interfered, no conclusive ending. So I think Battleground's just set to be a building block for SummerSlam, nothing more.
Yeah, but do you really think that they're going to, like have these matches again? Like, do you really think they're gonna do?
Of course.
You really think the Shield will still face each other if they're not all on one show? I really don't know, Sean. It's like, I hope they do, but.
Who's to say that they won't all be on one show though?
Well.
They very well could be.
They could. I mean, it's definitely not ruled out. I mean, you're right about that. They could be all on one show. But the thing is, will they do it? I know if I was booking the draft, that's how I would do it. But will WWE really do that? It's like I feel, all right, even if this match already happened, okay? Like, you know, not like we're looking at this as a first-time thing. But, like, if this match already happened, I'd be looking at it like, Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns really, they should not be on separate shows, period. Those guys always need to be on the same show. So it's like they're all there. There's that possibility of them either feuding or maybe even getting back together at some point. And if you put them on different shows, it's like we could all forget about that Shield reunion they were talking about in 2017. Cause I remember after 6 months after the Shield broke up, believe it or not, I believe it was Dave Meltzer that reported the news that WWE would plan a Shield reunion in the future, but they don't think it would happen to 2017. So if that is something that's still on the table, but I doubt it because WWE changes plans so much, but if that's something that's still on the table, they have to stay on one show. No doubt. They have to. They don't have no other alternative. And Cena and Styles, I mean, you know, think about this. With Cena and Styles, it's like Lance Storm tweeted out. Lance Storm, and I give him all the credit in the world, Lance Storm tweeted out. He's like, so WWE celebrated John Cena's 14th year with the WWE, but John Cena and AJ Styles was 15 years in the making, and then he put something like hashtag something with math. I forgot what it was. I'll have to look up that tweet. But Lance Storm is right. How could something be 15 years in the making when Cena was still in Ohio Valley Wrestling in developmental, and TNA didn't get established till 2002? It's, you know, it's 14 years at that point, but I don't think people's really started thinking about that dream match until Styles was already established in TNA, was the, what, Grand Slam or Triple Crown winner, whatever it is over there, Triple Crown winner maybe, and Cena was established, you know, being a multi-time world champion. I don't know what you think, but Lance Storm sent out a pretty damn good tweet on that one.
Well, I think they were just rough estimating by saying 15 years, like, just like a good way of describing when both of their careers started, because that's about right. I mean, if you estimate it, you know, you don't gotta get too technical with that stuff.
You know what? I can see what you mean. It could be as simple, you know, as rounding the numbers up and, you know, I could see that. I'm more of a guy that's precise with everything. And it's like the little thing.
It's just like from a business standpoint though, 15 years sells a lot better than 14 years. It's just a nice even number.
I know. It is an even number.
Well, it's technically an odd number, but you know how it loves those.
Yeah, those 5, 10, 15, 20, all that stuff.
Yep. So any thoughts on like, if, you know, well, we'll talk about this for a bit. I mean, Roman Reigns has been suspended. We talked about this last week, I do believe, and so you obviously do want to see the Shield triple threat, but do you understand what it must be like to those guys that don't break the rules, that they don't do drugs, they bust their ass like Cesaro and Kevin Owens, and they have to watch someone that fails a wellness policy go ahead and get a main event of a pay-per-view when they're doing all the right things? What does that teach? How does that help morale?
Honestly, it lowers the morale of the company. Like, I'll admit, being even a person that wants to see the match, does Roman Reigns deserve to be in it? No. All you're doing is making basically disgruntled employees that work hard. And for Roman Reigns, this means nothing to him. You know what this is to Roman Reigns? This is a 30-day vacation. A 30-day vacation. He gets to go home, spend time with his family, and he knows when he gets back, he still has his main event spot. You know, it's like every other talent that violated the policy, their stock took a hit. Even Randy Orton took a hit, and he had to build back up. All guys that went through this have taken a hit. Roman Reigns ain't taking no hit. I mean, even if he has to be the fall guy, you know, for punishment, it's like still, he's in the main event that certain superstars would kill to be in. And if you have Roman Reigns, God forbid, win the title back, what does that say to everybody else in the company that's busting their ass? Like, you could get suspended for 30 days. You could, you know, go home, take your time off, be in a main event, and then win the title back. If that would happen, I hope to God WWE isn't that stupid, but if that would happen, there's going to be serious problems within the company internally.
Definitely agree with that. And to begin with, like, I don't even think we should consider Roman Reigns a part of the Shield. I mean, yeah, he was there, but Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are the two that, you know, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are like the Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin of our modern era. And Roman Reigns is really like The Rock, where at least this time we know that The Rock is going to turn his back on us and just use us to sell movie tickets. Whereas Stone Cold and Triple H, just like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, they really love it.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, and it's like, I just think about all this. Like, how does Roman Reigns even remotely, like, first of all, he must be kissing up to somebody backstage. Obviously it's Vince. Maybe even Kevin Dunn too. Because how in the world does he still have that spot? Especially if his draft stock, what if he goes like in the top two or three picks still? What does that even tell everybody that's working hard? A suspended guy will get drafted before them? That's another thing. WWE might make a mess out of this.
Well, I think it was also announced today that we're going to have one last final match between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens.
Yeah, yep. At Battleground, that's going to take place. I guess supposedly it's the final encounter. You know, one last match. Now they're labeling it the last match, so that pretty much gives me a foregone conclusion that they're splitting these guys up. They basically gave us the answer right then and there that these guys are going to different shows. And I just don't know. I would prefer to keep them together because they could really, you know, build a good rivalry over the years and, you know, be one of the biggest established rivalries. And, you know, if they're going to split them up, I don't know. I'm very concerned, very worried with what they may do in this draft. Because if you think about it, look at Raw last night. Like, even though, yeah, I was excited, I'll admit I gave it a 10. Was I generous? Yeah, I was generous. I mean, in all reality, if you really look at the plot points of Raw last night, they gave us two matches, like Ambrose Styles, Cena, Rollins. We knew that nobody was going to get added to the title match, so it was basically pointless to even have the matches. I mean, they did it to build for Styles and Cena, but, you know, it's like, I can just imagine with these guys not being there, I just think of 3 hours of television, you're going to have 3 hours with 50% of the roster. This is going to be a damaged show. SmackDown, I'm not concerned about. SmackDown, like I said, is going to thrive. I think SmackDown is going to be the only thing that's going to thrive out of this. Raw, I think, is going to suffer, and I think the pay-per-views are going to suffer. And that's because pay-per-views are 3 hours. Raw is 3 hours. So SmackDown's going to have to force 3 hours of entertainment on a pay-per-view. Raw's got to put together three hours of entertainment on Raw and on pay-per-views. And with 50% rosters, I see disaster. I really do. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to, you know, say like, oh, you know, this product, you know, like I told you so. Like I really, you know, want it, you know, not to succeed, but it's like, no, that's not how I look at it. I want it to succeed. I'm not one of those that want it to fail. I want it to succeed, but the more I'm really picking this apart and I'm thinking about it, I just don't see how there's any positivity in this draft. I really don't. Battleground, I think, is going to be, going back to Battleground, I mean, if they book it correctly, which, you know, so far the main matches, I believe, are booked well. It's a matter of if they deliver them well. If they do, Battleground will be a fantastic pay-per-view. I think Battleground might be, if they book it correctly, one of the last good pay-per-views in a long time. I just don't see how this brand split and, you know, these pay-per-views are gonna do anything good for the business. You know, two pay-per-views a month, a pay-per-view every 2 weeks. I've read other reports on that leaked schedule, you know, that I put up on my YouTube channel, a short video on it, that leaked schedule, they're saying, from what reports are saying now, that it's pretty much confirmed that it's real. But, you know, still take it with a grain of salt, but certain reports are saying, yeah, it's real. So if it really is indeed real, they got a lot of hours of entertainment to fill. And you remember what the one source that I know personally, Sean, remember when he told us, and he told me, that with 3 hours of Raw every week, how hard it is, you know, already with the full roster being together. You know what I'm talking about, correct? When we spoke with a source.
Yep.
And I just can't help but see his point is correct. Look at how difficult it is for these creative writers to try to get a script to Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon wants to micromanage everything to death. And, you know, that's just what he does. And for some reason, even though their roster's full, because they do have a full roster, even though their roster is full, it's like, how do I explain it? Even though their roster's full now, you know, and they're still not booking up to par, in my opinion. They could be doing so much better, but they're not. But then when you take 50% of that away, you're making that difficulty twice as hard as it was before to book a Monday Night Raw or to book a 3-hour pay-per-view. Because think about it, the pay-per-views are not shorter. They're gonna remain 3 hours. Raw's gonna remain 3 hours. SmackDown is the only show that's gonna benefit from this draft. That's it. Raw's pay-per-views will suffer every week. I just have that sinking feeling the more I'm picking this apart. And it's very concerning. These next couple months are damn interesting though to be a WWE fan, you know, with Battleground, the draft, SummerSlam around the corner, but see, this is what I'm afraid of. Once SummerSlam is over, and you have that long period throughout the fall when you get Hell in a Cell, and, you know, going into the winter with TLC, even Survivor Series hasn't been all that great lately. I think after SummerSlam, WWE's gonna plummet. I just have this bad, bad feeling in my gut. And I hope to God, I pray to God that I'm wrong. It's like, please let me be wrong, but I don't know. There's just too much evidence, in my opinion, that's pointing the other way. It really is. What, Sean?
Echo.
Is it alright now?
Hello?
I can hear you.
A little echo.
Because I still have my mic in the same spot here. I know it's fine on the channel.
Hello?
Yep.
Let me sign off and come back in.
Okay. But while we're waiting for Sean to come back on, yeah, you know, you take all that into consideration, people, and then, you know, you think of Roman Reigns, he got suspended. Guys like Kevin Owens, like Sean said, Dolph Ziggler, think of all the guys, Cesaro, I mean, it's true.
Nope.
Here we go. Is it good?
Yep.
Okay.
But you know, speaking of SummerSlam, so like, let's move on now to what will totally, like as of now, it's pretty much impossible to predict any single SummerSlam match because the draft, which I want to talk about next, is going to single-handedly define the entire SummerSlam card.
Yes.
Are they able, do you think, like, are they going to have to pull some of the present rivalries over, make sure that the present rivalries are still on the same show? Are they going to be able to make an entire SummerSlam match card with only a month of build of possible matches?
That's another thing that's going to hurt the card, no doubt. That's why I think Cena and Styles are going to SmackDown. I think they're going to drag that match out to a third match, which I think will be the tiebreaker, because I think John Cena will win at Battleground. Both men will get drafted to SmackDown. They're going to move on. As far as Raw goes, if all the Shield guys stay on Raw, I wouldn't mind seeing you know, a triple threat rematch or something of that kind. But, you know, then again, do you just scrap all the old rivalries and just, you know, make new ones? Do you bring guys up like Finn Balor, which I think could be a very strong possibility? Balor, I think, is how he's going to make his debut. He's going to get drafted. He's going to get drafted on the main roster. I think that's how it's going to happen. Whether or not what show he ends up on, I don't know. I hope Finn Balor ends up on the same show as Seth Rollins, if you ask me, because I want to see that match happen. But SummerSlam, don't forget too, they got 4 hours to fill. And like I said, with the full roster, with any match combinations available last year at SummerSlam, you know, SummerSlam was good, but it wasn't the best SummerSlam in the world. Now this leaves 50% of match possibilities are going to be cut in half because your rosters are split. You got to try to make rivalries. You got to try to build them in 4 weeks, which obviously is rushed. It's rushed to me. I think this draft should have taken place in June. I think this month it should have happened. It should have happened after Money in the Bank. I think they're going a month too late with the draft, because the draft could have been done after Money in the Bank. You have your roster split. You could have started building rivalries slowly, do a few things at Battleground Intense, more rivalries for SummerSlam. And now I think they're going to have to rush into builds now for SummerSlam. This draft is coming a month too late even. So it's like, even when you think of that, that's another thing that WWE did wrong in my book. They really did, because this draft should have been last Monday on Raw. And, you know, all of this could have been avoided. It could have been avoided. Battleground could have been the one you could have rushed things together for, because Battleground's not that important of a pay-per-view, and really have had concrete establishment for your second biggest pay-per-view of the year, SummerSlam. So that's another, like, crucial WWE error, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we still don't even know how they're going to work with the championships.
Yeah, they haven't announced it. They have not announced that. Can you believe that? Like, there is no talk from Shane or Stephanie, any of the authority figures on TV.
I don't even think they know what they're going to do. I don't think they know.
That's what's going to make this even worse, Sean.
They're jumping into this blind.
Yeah, I really think what they're going to do, if you want my honest opinion, I think the tag team titles in the women's division should be on both shows. Have the Intercontinental and the U.S. champ, you know, one on each show. And then from what I heard, like I said, when they first announced the draft, that they want to have two world champions. So you'll have the champ on SmackDown and the champ on Raw. If it was up to me, all champions would be on both shows. You hold a championship, you carry that belt, and you're getting the championship bonuses in your salary, and you have that responsibility of a champion, then go out and work both shows. That's your responsibility as a champion.
Yeah, make it actually mean something.
But instead, they're going to add another world champ, as far as from what I've heard so far. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. It's not confirmed, so take it with a grain of salt, but I've already heard the subtle differences. Like, notice how they always called the WWE title the WWE World Heavyweight title? Now I've noticed how they're just calling it the WWE Championship. So, I really think they're already planning on bringing back the world title belt. They're already planning on it.
And by the way, people, the World Heavyweight title belt is not actually the NWA and WCW championship. This is a WWE version. The NWA WCW championship was retired in 2002 when Chris Jericho became the Undisputed Champion.
Yep. Exactly.
Jericho was the last ever World Heavyweight Champion in a legacy of over 100 years of champions. That's pretty damn cool.
It, you know what? That was one of the greatest moments of my life, having my favorite wrestler get that title, man. It was the best. But with the whole two champions thing, all right, I get it. Guys like Cesaro, guys like Kevin Owens, they'll have more of an opportunity to get to that world title because two world titles means more opportunity. I have nothing against opportunity. But can't you give these guys an opportunity with just one world title? Because how do you know which guy is the true champion, the true standard bearer of your company? So it's like, oh, we're going to have two standard bearers of our company. You have one champ. See, I'm old school like that. I want one champ. You have one man.
This is the perfect opportunity for them to give validity to the U.S. and Intercontinental Championship.
You could make
it. Because that could be more exclusive and have, you know, the U.S. Championship on SmackDown and the IC Championship on Raw and have the World Champion be the baddest dog in the yard, able to go on any show he wants. I could picture someone like Brock Lesnar get the championship back and appear wherever he may choose.
Yeah, you know, who's ever is really tearing it up, say with their U.S. or Intercontinental title, who's ever really running with it, and they've been running with it for some time, those should be like number one contender belts, like the Intercontinental title belt used to mean. That was like the Ultimate Warrior. He was the WWE Intercontinental Champion going into WrestleMania 6. He was the number one contender. He fought Hulk Hogan title for title, and he took that world belt. He had both titles at the end of the night to prove he was the best in the world. But now, with two champs...
Well, I think you could say Seth Rollins did that too. Seth Rollins was the U.S. and World Heavyweight Champion. He beat John Cena. And he beat Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns for those two belts. And, by the way, he retired Sting.
Yep. Rollins has an incredible resume. An incredible resume. And now with just two championships, I don't know. That doesn't rub me the right way.
They're not going to do it because their image of the two major championships, the men's championship and the women's championship, is too perfect to clutter up with the world heavyweight belt.
Yeah, and like think about this, with the women's championship, the women's division is not big enough to where you can have, you know, two women's champions. The tag title division is not big enough to where you could have two tag belts. And I think they see that, but I think they're just, adding the world title for like a consolation prize for all these guys that, you know, deserve opportunity. Like I'm going to look at the world title as, you know, just like the second place belt, the consolation prize. That's how I thought
of it. I think they need to bring the women's tag team championships back and have like a women's U.S. championship.
But do they have enough women to have all those titles?
Well, here's my ideal situation. They have a women's tag team championship that could go on any show, a men's tag team championship that could go on any show, a women's, you're right. I mean, I want the tag team championships to be able to go on any show. And I think they need to have a light heavyweight belt on each show, but I don't know. This is a mess.
All they're doing is making a mess. They really are. They're making a complete, how should I say it? A complete clusterfuck, you know, of everything. They really are. Oh, by the way, just cracked open a Mountain Dew Kickstart again, right there. This is the energizing blueberry pomegranate one.
Nice.
But it's like, I think this is going to hurt the company in a big way. I know a lot of people are excited. I know a lot of people loved the first brand extension, but like I said, I tried to give it a chance at first, but I ended up not liking it. I just wasn't happy. And I just don't see any promise in this. I think fans by WrestleMania 33 are going to be wanting the rosters to go back as one.
That's what I was going to say, that could you picture Mr. McMahon making a return within the next year if the draft is just too stupid? I can picture Mr. McMahon coming back and blaming Shane and Stephanie and just stopping the draft to try and save the company.
I mean, that would be a great storyline. I wonder if this could tie into, you know, Shane and Stephanie, if they each running a show. If this could tie into Shane McMahon and Triple H at WrestleMania 33. Remember when I talked about that before WrestleMania 32 even happened? I talked about
that. You'll be right.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering if this could lead to Triple H versus Shane. You know, Triple H wins, then the Authority takes over both brands. Shane wins, then he takes over both brands, and we go back to one roster. I don't know if this is something temporary to, you know, basically make a rivalry and get the rosters back at, you know, all as one. It's confusing, especially in a downtime for the company, to decide to have a brand extension to, in their words, spice things up. I don't know how it's going to really spice things up. If anything, I could see it just dragging things down. But I guess as fans, we have to make the best of this time and see what they're going to do with it. If they end up surprising us and giving us, you know, damn good television, then God bless them. But I don't know. I mentioned this to the people, Sean, while you stepped away for a second, but I want your opinion on this, so I'll repeat it again. Like when I talked about Shane and Triple H over the wintertime on my YouTube show about how they could do that at WrestleMania 33. They still could do it if you have Shane and Stephanie take over, you know, each brand. This leads to Triple H, Shane McMahon, WrestleMania 33, winner takes over both brands, and we go back to one brand again. It's like, is this a way? Split the brands temporarily so you could build towards this big history-making match at Mania and then put it all back together after WrestleMania. But even then, it's still going to hurt things because, say, if Brock Lesnar's drafted on SmackDown and say we want to see him face somebody like, I don't know, say if it was Shinsuke Nakamura and he was on SmackDown. We can't see that because they're on different shows. But I know that from what I heard is the Rock versus Brock Lesnar was what they would do. I know the Rock ain't going to be a part of this draft. But since Brock Lesnar is under contract, I wonder if Brock Lesnar is going to be part of this.
I think so. And from the sounds of it, I was listening to the Stone Cold podcast with Bill Goldberg. Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, I believe, is going to happen again. Just the way they were talking, man, they were hinting. I suggest everyone listen to it and make your own decisions, but that's my opinion. That's what I got from it.
Are you thinking it's going to happen at WrestleMania 33 or 34?
Three. Part two.
But McMahon, how do I say this? I guess I'm just going to be graphic and say it in my terminology. Vince McMahon has had this hard on since WrestleMania 30 to have The Rock versus Brock Lesnar. And now, you know, with 31, The Rock wasn't able to wrestle. 32, he wasn't able to wrestle, even though he just did a quick 6-second match, rock bottoming Eric Rowan. It really wasn't, you know, him wrestling. He just did a rock bottom. But now with 33, it seems like from what, you know, they've been hearing is that The Rock will probably be open. It'll be in Florida. He'll be able to wrestle. And I'm afraid that Vince isn't going to stop until he gives us The Rock and Brock. Which is going to take away the Bill Goldberg-Brock Lesnar rematch.
Dude, no one wants to see The Rock and Brock. No one. We want to see two freaks of nature destroy each other.
Yeah, like,
not some Hollywood user that now we find out he wants to run for president.
I remember when you were telling me about that. You want to touch on that for a second so the people know what you're referring to? I'll let you touch on it since you heard about it.
Well, The Rock reported to the Washington Post that allegedly if he were to run for president, he has a high chance of being able to win. But to what? I mean, I don't get it. Whatever. I don't even have any comment.
It's like, you know,
I don't like the way that The Rock literally uses the fans to buy movie tickets.
If you would watch, I don't know if you ever seen or heard this maybe on YouTube, because I don't think the episode's not up on the network yet. When The Rock was announced as the guest host for WrestleMania 27, and I know you, this is when you were out of it, when he came back and they started that whole beef with Cena a year in advance, The Rock was like, finally, The Rock has come back home. And then he went on this promo, doing a long speech on how he went away, and then he's like, and I give you my word that I'm never, ever leaving ever again. And then what did he do? He left again.
Typical politician there.
And then for whatever reason, why do people still give this guy a hero's welcome every time he walks in the door? He basically lies to them, gets their hopes up, feeds them a bunch of bullshit, and everybody's just, you know, they suck it up.
He looks like Xerxes from 300.
I mean, I don't know, man. It really bugs me. it really bugs me, like, what is wrong, you know, with the whole picture? Like, especially if The Rock comes back and faces Brock at WrestleMania 33, let alone just having that match, but can you imagine if The Rock were to beat Brock Lesnar clean? The man that ended The Undertaker's streak? Can you imagine if The Rock were to beat him clean? McMahon giving him a clean pinfall victory over Brock Lesnar? That would send me into a rage. Good God. I know fans would love it. He's going to have the hometown support in Florida. But I mean, good God, I get it, you know, he's your home, you know, like in Florida, he's their hometown guy, but still, like, that is wrong. Like, you know, even though Brock's a part-time guy, he beat the streak. He's been, you know, working his tail off, you know, with it when he does come back, and they would just let The Rock beat him clean like that? Oh my God, dude. I would lose so much respect for Vince at that point. Because if you're gonna have Brock Lesnar lose, even to lose to Goldberg, okay, that's a point because Goldberg rarely ever loses clean. But then again, Brock Lesnar like still kind of symbolically holds the streak in a way. It's like the next man to pin or make Brock Lesnar submit is going to beat the one in 21-1. And it's like symbolic, you know, like symbolically almost, if they beat Brock Lesnar, they're basically, you know, getting the streak handed over to them. That's going to be their big push to run with it. And for The Rock to get that, it wouldn't make no sense to me. You need a guy of the future to beat Brock Lesnar and give him a push and make him your next face of the WWE.
Well, any other thoughts on the draft before we head over to news and rumors?
With the draft, just to tell people ahead of time, we're gonna try, okay? It's not a guarantee because we got to see how our schedules are, but we're going to try to do a podcast, a Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast, live draft special to where me and Sean would be on the air live while the draft is taking place to let you know live as it happens, who gets drafted where, what do we think, what do we think of it? Where do we think the company's gonna go with this? You know, once we see everything laid out, if we can do it, we'll do a live draft special on July 19th. And if we do that, it will definitely be a fun show. I know SmackDown will be 2 hours that night, so that podcast would probably run a little bit over. That night it would probably be, I would say, around 2.5 hours. It would be like a little bit of a special one, a little bit longer because once it would go off the air, we would break it down for you what happened, and then we would sign off. But that would definitely be a great special if we can get it together. But as far as the whole draft in itself, I really hope it works out for WWE, but I'm a concerned WWE fan. I just see this. I see Raw crumbling under itself, along with the pay-per-views. SmackDown's gonna thrive. SmackDown will be just fine. SmackDown will probably be better than it's ever been. But I really think Raw is gonna crumble and take a huge hit. And I read a report that, you know, some fans might be saying right now listening to us, well, why don't they just make Raw 2 hours then and solve this whole problem? They can't. The contract that they signed with NBC Universal has them doing 3-hour Raws until the year 2019. So WWE is stuck for the next 3 years with 3-hour Raws. And yet, even knowing that, they still went ahead. They went ahead with this draft, knowing that they can't change their Raw time slot for the next 3 years.
Now, what do you have on the lineup for the first news and rumor?
You know what? I actually, I haven't looked at anything yet because I got so wrapped up with everything I was just explaining to everybody, but I'm gonna go on the newswire right now and check out some things and see what we got. But I don't know, Sean. It's like I wish that I could sit here and be all happy and be, you know, positive with you and say that, you know, wow, I really feel that this is going to work good, but I don't know, man. I'm just feeling more concerned and more concerned as time goes on. Wow, here's a good report to start off with. For those of you that missed our WWE Monday Night Raw coverage with the live review results and commentary, finally pulled that one out on YouTube for the first time in a while, and we had a great time. So if you missed that video, go check it out. I'll link it down below in the description on YouTube here. But I do find a good story here. And wow. Raw ratings, people. Monday night's WWE Monday Night Raw rating is in. How did the show do? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, right here, right now. The ratings for Monday night's WWE Raw broadcast are in, and the show saw a slip in numbers this week. Monday's Raw broadcast drew 3.093 million viewers with a 1.12 cable rating in the 18 to 49 demographic. So that goes to show you right there. Even though there's a little over 3 million viewers, 1.12 in the 18 to 49 demographic, that means you got basically people under 18 that are probably, 60% of the viewing audience. So that's a concern. A lot of the people, you know, that are 18 to 49 are kind of falling out of it. But those numbers are down 13% and 11% from the previous week's 1.82 demo rating with 3.46 million viewers. WWE Raw was ranked number 3 for the night among cable originals for the night. The show trailed Love and Hip Hop Atlanta with a 1.38 demo rating and a 2.712 million viewers, and Black Ink Crew with a 1.18/2.182 million demo rating, I guess. And here are the hourly numbers. 8 p.m., 1.11 demo rating, 3.096 million viewers. The 9 o'clock hour, 1.14 demo rating with 3.173 million viewers. And in the 10 o'clock hour, we slip back down to 1.11 demo rating and 3.011 million viewers. So Raw ratings down 13% and 11% respectively. And that right there is a concern. I mean, how do you feel about the Raw ratings taking a slip?
Yeah, from the amount I've seen, I'm not really too surprised.
Yeah. But I'll tell you.
Man, just listening to the Joe Cronin show last night, I heard you call in, and the people on there were crucifying Raw last night.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised because, you know, but then again, it's like I really wasn't, because I think I just had such a good rating with it because I was having so much fun and it made the show seem so much better.
Yeah.
Being with all you guys last night on the air on YouTube, and you know, made it better. But if you really look at it underneath it all, what did they really do? They tried to make us believe that they were going to change the world title match when you knew damn well they weren't going to. And you build the suspense all night of The Miz defending his Intercontinental title against a mystery opponent. And then what do we get? We get Jurassic Park itself. Kane. What has he done? Last time I think I seen him was what, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal? When he was in a match? And now he's getting an Intercontinental title match against The Miz. Man.
Well, yo, real quick, since we just talked about Raw, might as well, we won't have too many of these left, but we have SmackDown spoilers. Cesaro defeated Sheamus, Apollo Crews, and Alberto Del Rio in a fatal four-way to become the number one contender for the U.S. Championship. He will face Rusev later in the night. And then, speaking of that match, Rusev retained the WWE U.S. Championship title over Cesaro after a good match. Then we had Dana Brooke squash Billie Kay from NXT, and Sasha Banks versus Summer Rae is announced. Miz TV with the WWE Intercontinental Champion The Miz and WWE Champion Dean Ambrose leads to a fight, and The Miz goes over. The Wyatt family made their entrance. Braun Strowman and Eric Rowan squashed two local wrestlers. Sasha Banks defeated Summer Rae, and Dean Ambrose defeated The Miz in a non-title match. This was provided by Nicholas Alcazar for the SmackDown spoilers, live from Miami, Florida. Thank you to WrestlingINC.com.
I mean, I'll be here, you know, on YouTube after SmackDown to, you know, review it and give my thoughts. But what you just read on those spoilers, it doesn't sound too promising, people, at all. At all. Last week's SmackDown was good, but this week's SmackDown, it's going to take a big hit. I have a feeling. But I'll tell you, Sean, Raw ratings slip again. We're in SummerSlam season. This is, you know, like going into WrestleMania season all over again, how the ratings were just falling. And you're getting into the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, and the ratings are going backwards. How can the WWE not be concerned? How? If you're Vince McMahon, and you're overseeing all this, and you see your ratings falling, how can you go to sleep at night and not be scared to death that your product is going to plummet? I mean, I understand you're the biggest wrestling company in the world, but sometimes even the biggest things in the world get taken down if they don't shape up. And that should be a big time concern for the WWE. And with the ratings slipping back on Raw with 100% of the talent on hand, I gotta go back to this with the draft. What are the ratings going to do with 50% of that roster on hand? 50%, Sean, cut in half. What we've seen on Raw last night is gonna be cut in half. How is that gonna better this product? It's going to make it worse. It will. It has to. It's almost like numbers don't lie. You know, it's almost like the numbers don't lie. And when you pick it all apart, this is what I don't understand, what the WWE is really thinking up here. With just those numbers, you see you have everybody on hand. You got every major superstar on the roster available and ready to go that come out and entertain everybody on Monday Night Raw. And your ratings are still slipping. What are you going to do with 50% of the roster? What are you going to do if people want to see, like, say, John Cena, AJ Styles, and, you know, Raw comes to their hometown and they're not there and they're on SmackDown? Those casual fans are not going to buy tickets to see your event because their favorite performers are not there. It's going to hurt ticket sales. It's going to hurt ratings. It's going to hurt match possibilities. There's just too much on the line. You know, they should have focused on fixing up the company, getting your ratings up, building more quality TV with a full roster. Then once you establish that, and get this too, Sean, establish new talent. That's one thing that the WWE has never done. How are you going to give these other guys that deserve opportunities, don't get me wrong, they deserve opportunities, but how are you going to give them opportunities and put them in a main event scene for possibly a world title when they are not established? People are not going to be, you know, interested to see people that have not been established, and that's going to hurt the cards and hurt the ratings altogether as well. They are not thinking. The WWE is seriously not thinking. I mean, if I was running the company, I would, you know, figure out how to establish new stars, get them established, get them ready to go. When you see your ratings making a turnaround and they hold steady for maybe like 6 months, your ratings are holding steady, you're going up week by week, and you have established more young superstars, then split your roster. Then split it. You know why? Because they're ready. They are not ready now. They are nowhere near ready. This is what they're not real. How come I can see this, but the powers that be in Stamford, Connecticut are basically fucking blind and they can't see shit? How? I know that, you know, people would like me to give an answer on it, and I don't mean to ask a question because I know people want to hear, you know, an answer, but how do I give an answer to something when WWE is being so idiotic and so stubborn and so stupid? How am I supposed to give an answer to that? Do you understand what I mean?
Yep.
So that's a very difficult, you know, situation there. And I hope it works out for the better, Sean. I pray. I pray all the time because I love this business. You know, it's been part of me forever. And just to see them making the mistakes like this, these are mistakes that should not be made. I don't even work for the company. Why can I see this, but they can't? That's the main question. Actually, that ding came off at the perfect time.
Yeah, I have my text messages linked up with my computer. I don't know how to stop that.
Oh, you got the phone, everything running up with the computer? That's cool.
But yo, I got some stories here myself, you know, two stories that I really want to talk about. Jimmy Superfly Snuka, who was deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial, he is added to the WrestleCon list. That's right. Raj Giri of WrestlingINC.com reports the following, that just earlier this month, a judge in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, ruled that WWE legend Jimmy Superfly Snuka was not mentally competent to stand trial in the 1983 death of his then-girlfriend, Nancy Argentino. Since then, WrestleCon announced that Snuka will be appearing at WrestleCon 2017 at WrestleMania 33 week in Orlando. A new hearing will be held in December to reevaluate Snuka's competency. Although his lawyers argued that his condition won't improve, we noted last week here at WrestlingINC.com that prosecutors filed a motion asking the court to force Snuka to participate in outpatient mental health treatment for 60 days to determine whether he can be fit to stand trial. Peter Gerber contributed to this article, and you could follow Raj Giri on Twitter at RajGiri_303. And if you have a news tip or correction, you could send it to us at BeyondTheRingWithBigT.com or WrestlingINC.com.
Jimmy Superfly Snuka at WrestleCon 2017. Wow. You know, he was supposed to be there this year, 2016. I don't know if you knew that, but when I went down there, he was supposed to be there. And then, you know, the whole thing with the trial broke and that didn't happen, but wow. My main question is Jimmy Snuka really as incompetent as he says, or as his attorneys say he is? Is he really? Because if he really was, do you think somebody as sick as Jimmy Superfly Snuka in such bad health would go on a plane to Orlando, Florida? And do you think that he would sign his, you know, be able to sit there for hours and sign his name to a bunch of autographs? I mean, if he's so incompetent, then how is he confident, you know, to have the wherewithal mentally to sit there and sign autographs and take pictures if he's so mentally incompetent? Because supposedly he suffers from dementia. Now, dementia is very serious and, you know, very rapidly progressing, you know, mental disorder. So, I don't know. Something sounds fishy to me there.
Big time. Big time fish.
Now, when I'm down in Orlando, if I'm there, if I'm there on the day he signs, will I go there just to meet him? Maybe, because it's kind of like meeting, you know, like
Chris Benoit, practically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get to meet with a person and, you know, take a picture with them, like, basically, which is probably going to be his last signing, I would imagine. I don't know for sure, but he's getting old now. He's not what he used to be, you know. But I'll tell you, something's not right there, my friend.
Oh, man. Well.
And I know that hits close to, you know, your neck of the woods.
Dude, I drove right past that place yesterday.
And there's a Home Depot in there now, correct? Where,
That's what we read that one time, I mean.
Because a hotel where the supposed murder took place?
Yep.
Hmm. You know what?
It's been torn down and apparently a Home Depot's there.
I wonder what's going on, you know, going through the mind of poor Tamina. Could you imagine the stress that Tamina's got to be under? I wonder if that has to do with why she hasn't been on TV, or is it because she's injured? I don't know.
Yeah, I thought she was injured.
All right, then that's probably the case. Although right now, even if she were to come back, I don't even know what they would have for her, because it's like Naomi has basically been pulled off of television. We haven't seen Naomi since, was it Fastlane? Or sometime after Fastlane? I don't think she wasn't at Mania in that Divas tag, I don't think, was she?
I thought she was.
Oh yeah, that's right, Team Bad and Blonde, yep. I think that was the last time we seen her at Mania. She hasn't been around since. So I mean, that's something to think of right there, like, wow, I can only imagine what she's going through. Having to deal with all of this. That's, you know, a sad, unfortunate situation. I mean, Jimmy Snuka, if his disease is so rapidly progressing too, as they claim, how do they even know, you know, and I don't want to say this, but how do they even know Jimmy Snuka is even going to still be with us in 2017 if he's in such bad shape? That's another thing to take into consideration there. Because you know how we always have, you know, the unfortunate news of reporting wrestlers, you know, being gone too soon. And, you know, that's another thing to think about. Because it's like when he was on trial, or, you know, when he was going to court, not on trial, but when he was going to court, when they had that whole thing whether or not he could stand trial, I read reports that said, you know, some people are believe that Jimmy Snuka is near death.
Well, how about you? I mean, I'm up to move over to a better story now because that's just, good.
Let's move on to something better.
Well, I'm definitely pumped about this. The WWE Cruiserweight Classic 2016, the inaugural classic, is set to take place, well, premiere on television July 13th on the WWE Network. It's coming before we know it, and I figured I'd give a little spotlight to it here. We're about 2 weeks shy, so let's talk about it. The Cruiserweight Classic, formerly known as the Global Cruiserweight Series, is an upcoming professional wrestling tournament held by the WWE, with all participants billed at a weight of 205 pounds or less. Tournament qualifying matches are taking place in various promotions of the independent circuit, including well-known promotions such as Revolution Pro Wrestling, Progress Wrestling, and Evolve. Many cruiserweight wrestlers from around the world will have the chance to qualify for the 32-man tournament, which will take place over the dates of June 23rd, July 14th, August 26th, and September 14th, 2016. So the announced competitors thus far, NXT competitors Rich Swann, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, along with international standouts like Zack Sabre Jr., Noam Dar, Ho-Ho Loon, and Akira Tozawa, were announced for the Cruiserweight Classic, which begins with qualifying matches. Another athlete indicated his participation on April 2nd when Lince Dorado announced at an independent show in Orlando, Florida, that he will compete in the series as well on April 24th at Progress Wrestling Chapter 29 after Sabre Jr. Jack Gallagher also won a qualifying match. So let's talk about it real quick. The participants thus far, Akira Tozawa, Alejandro Saez, Anthony Bennett, Aria Daivari, Cedric Alexander of America, Clement Petiot of France, Da Mack of Germany, Damian Slater of Australia, Drew Gulak of America, Fabian Achner of Ireland, I believe, and Gran Metallic of Mexico, Gurv Shira of India, Harv Shira of India, Ho-Ho Loon of Hong Kong, Jack Gallagher of England, the United Kingdom, Jason Lee of China, Johnny Gargano of the United States, Kenneth Johnson of the United States, Kota Ibushi of Japan, Lince Dorado of, I believe that's Puerto Rico, and Mustafa Ali of, I believe the flag is of Pakistan. And just lost my page there. So just trying to introduce everyone here to our future, friends on the Cruiserweight Tournament. Noam Dar of Scotland, Raul Mendoza of India, Rich Swann of the United States, Sean Maluta of America, Samoa, TJ Perkins of the Republic of the Philippines, Tajiri, we all know him, of Japan will be in the tournament, as well as Tommaso Ciampa, Tony Nese of the United States, Tyson Ducks, the only Canadian represented on the roster, and Zack Sabre Jr. of the United Kingdom, all on the Cruiserweight tournament. Cruiserweight Classic. And apparently the announcers were also released. Mike Rome, real name Austin Romero, is a ring announcer. And Mauro Ranallo is a lead commentator, along with Daniel Bryan, will be on color commentating. So Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan on commentary. I think this is going to be phenomenal. I love it. It's an Olympic type event where athletes from all over the world. You know what just sucks about this is that it has to be scripted. Like, why can't we just have an Olympic type event where it's not scripted? These guys have fun and go out there and, you know, they have fun with the wrestling, but, you know, have a submission match or, you know, do something along the lines of UFC and the Olympics. That's the only bad part about this is the part that WWE's fake. I mean, on paper, this sounds incredible. And I'm looking forward to it, even though it's scripted. I'm sure it's going to be beautifully done. But that's the one downside of it, that WWE is scripted.
I'll tell you, it's going to be a phenomenal Cruiserweight Classic. I am excited beyond belief. You know who I'm rooting for. I mean,
Gargano.
Gargano, the hometown boy from Cleveland, Ohio. I hope he gets through this and wins the Classic and, you know, just gets a phenomenal push from him. But am I looking forward to this? Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to this more than I've looked forward to anything on WWE TV in, you know, a good while. Because I think it's really going to be, you know, something that's going to be worth watching, something that we could really finally sink our teeth into. And having Daniel Bryan and Mauro Ranallo as part of the color commentary team.
Did you know about that?
Yes, I knew about the commentary team, yep.
That was the first I was learning of it. That's pretty damn cool.
Which, you know, for those two men to be on the color commentary team, I mean, what better can you ask for? In all honesty, what better can you really ask for?
It definitely feels like Vince McMahon has nothing to do with this. It seems to me like a Triple H production just by how good it is.
I really think it is a Triple H production. I do. I really believe that it is, you know, a Triple H production. He's having, you know, everything to do with this, and I think it's going to turn out to be one of the most phenomenal tournaments that we've seen in a long time. I think, I wonder if NXT has something to do with this. Like, is the winner going to get a push in NXT? You know, what's going to happen? I know you mentioned Tyson Dukes is going to be in this. He's a great performer. So is Cedric Alexander from, you know, ROH. He wrestled there. I've seen quite a bit of his matches, and I'm stoked. I'm literally stoked for this. The whole thing is, how many episodes are they going to have? That's one thing they haven't really disclosed. I know the first episode starts, what, July 13th?
Yeah, they said the last episode is September 14th with about one or two every month.
Okay, so it's going to be either a once monthly or a bi-weekly show. Pretty much. Which, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I really am. This Cruiserweight Classic is going to really breathe some life into the WWE. But like you said, I think this is a Triple H production. I think, you know, this is, you know, we're going to get something good because it's going to be like watching NXT. I am looking forward to this big time.
I think I'm going to root for Ciampa because he's on my fantasy roster.
Hey, no problems with that, bud. I just got to...
We'll tune in July 13th on the WWE Network, and we will cover it the whole way, that's for sure. But Big T, how about you? What's your main story of the night, bud?
You know, I've been looking for that, and you know, since we had all this talk about the draft, first off, I'm gonna go back to the Roman Reigns suspension thing real quick. I've heard reports on the Roman Reigns suspension that, you know, Dean Ambrose, I guess, from what rumors are saying, so take it with a grain of salt, that Dean Ambrose is like, basically like a placeholder. He's just holding the belt until Roman can get back in there, and then Roman's gonna win it back. But I'm really hoping these are people just trolling. You know, they're trolling the fans to get everybody in an uproar. Because like I said earlier, if that happens, then I think it's gonna be a big problem. Because a lot of guys are going to be upset. A lot of employees, I think, are going to become disgruntled. Maybe even some employees will ask for their release like Cody Rhodes did. Because they're going to be like, you know what, this is bullshit. Like, this whole fucking company revolves around Roman Reigns and none of us. Like, they are going to piss off a lot of people that way. So they better, if they really are thinking that, they better take a step back and reevaluate the situation. But I do have a lead story here, which is, let's see. I have a lead story here. It's a, you know, it's a, like a two-parter. WWE referring to Dean Ambrose as world champion due to the brand split and post-brand split GM names. So they got a few side stories in here that I'll read them just in case anybody in the, you know, in the Florida area, Miami, Florida area is interested. WWE superstar Sheamus will be appearing at the JCPenney's at the Dadeland Mall in Miami, Florida. You know, earlier today, sorry, on Tuesday, he will be there from 1 to 3 signing autographs. So hopefully, you know, any Sheamus fans in the Miami area got to, check that out.
Just the idea of Sheamus in Miami, I'm smelling a sunscreen commercial.
Can you imagine the sunburn he got from that? Yeah. I see another interesting story here, but I'll just finish with this one. Let's see. This is War by the Phantoms is the official theme song for WWE's Battleground pay-per-view. And then, listen to this one. During Monday's WWE Raw broadcast, and like I told you, I picked up on this, Michael Cole announced that the people in charge of Raw and SmackDown following the brand split will be referred to as Chief Operating Officers, so COOs. As you likely know by now, this is Triple H's current role in the WWE. Now, also as seen on Monday's WWE Raw broadcast, which is another thing I picked up on, the company began to refer to Dean Ambrose as the WWE Champion instead of the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Now, this is likely to be the beginning of the change toward the company having two world champions after the brand split and WWE draft. During the last brand extension, the champions were the WWE Champion and World Heavyweight Champion. And the graphic for Dean Ambrose's name and his Battleground match against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins were also changed in the same way. So now, you know, on the graphic it'll show, I guess, WWE Champion Dean Ambrose or the match for the WWE Championship instead of WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So, taking all those things into account, I mean, I pretty much speculated on the two world champion thing, but after reading that story, would you say now, with those hints on Raw, and, you know, the hints on Raw and everything of that nature, would you say that it's all but pretty much confirmed that there indeed are going to be two world champions? I'm curious what you think on that, bud.
Oh, I told you earlier, I hope there's not.
Yeah. But I don't know, I just feel that's all but confirming it. You know, if they're throwing those kind of hints around on TV, already changing the Battleground graphic to show WWE Championship instead of WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And then, here's the thing. If they do indeed bring back the World Heavyweight Championship, if I was them, I would stick to tradition. Bring back the big gold belt. Don't, like, have some kind of, you know, World Championship belt with, like, SmackDown on it or anything like that. Leave it as is, as the big gold belt, like it's been for so many years. But even then again, I'm not stoked about having, you know, two world champs. I just think that's a little ridiculous. I'm not too keen on that at all. So, I mean, there's a few things there, you know, to pick apart and really think on, but I don't know. I don't know. You know, and watch, that's how the first match, watch, that's what they're going to do for SummerSlam. You know, the brand split's going to be in effect. You know, they'll start SmackDown. They're probably going to have a SmackDown World Title Tournament, even though Vince McMahon hates tournaments. I hope they don't just put the belt on somebody. I hope they have a legit tournament for this world title. And the finals of that would be two elite superstars going head-to-head at SummerSlam. Maybe that's where AJ Styles and John Cena will come in. Maybe they'll both get drafted to SmackDown, and they will be in the, you know, like a SmackDown World Title Tournament, and they'll meet in the finals at SummerSlam. I mean, that would be a way to get people invested in, you know, having another world title belt, but even, you know, me at that point, I still really won't be that invested in it, to be honest with you. So it's all a matter of what your preference is, I guess, and how you feel about it, but you know me, how it is, man. One champ, you're the best, you know, wrestler in the world, best wrestler in the company, you're the standard bearer, you are the champ.
Yep.
They took care of this problem at TLC in 2013. They had the face-off with Cena and Orton. Who is, you know, the number one guy? Who is the real champion in the WWE? They put both belts up and they fought for it. And now they're just gonna completely split this again. After only 3 years, Sean, not even 3 years, 2.5 years of getting rid of this problem, they're bringing the problem back. It's like, my God. I don't know if this has to do with talent. Like maybe going to the front offices of the higher up saying that, you know, they're not getting enough opportunity. I don't know if this has to do with the fans' displeasure wanting to see a world title on certain guys that WWE hasn't put the title on. But still, you know, WWE should be giving all those guys a chance with one world title. Build them. Make them relevant. Have them have a run with, you know, just your one and only world title belt. Not, you know, split it up. And all right, well, I look at the second world title as just like, almost like a throwaway title, almost like a pity title. Like here, you want to be world champ? There you go. You got the secondary belt. We'll give it to you. This belt really doesn't matter. We know what really matters to us, the WWE Championship. You can win the world title. That's fine with us. You know, that's how they pretty much look at it, I think. And as far as Dean Ambrose goes, I'm, like I said, I'm a big Seth Rollins fan like you are. I know he's your all-time favorite. Do I want to see Seth Rollins win the title again? Yes. But you know, after what we've got with Roman Reigns and being so unhappy, basically since WrestleMania 32, Dean Ambrose is breathing that fresh air into the world title scene now. And I think they should let him run with this until, you know, Survivor Series. Give him a good 4 or 5 month title reign. People are really getting behind him. It's like Dean Ambrose, you know, it's like fans are really getting behind him. It's like he's a true babyface. He's getting big pops. And I think if you're going to build quality television, Dean Ambrose should remain champ for a while. Then you give it to Rollins, have them have good rivalries and, you know, just do that because the fans are behind Rollins and Ambrose at this time. Those are your go-to guys. Keep them within arm's length of one another and make it important. Because they're the guys, you know, not to sound like Roman Reigns, but they're the guys. I mean, they are. I mean, Balor. You know, if Balor's going to come up to the main roster, honestly, I would put him in the world title picture, you know, within probably 3 or 4 months. If he tears up the competition, they should bring him in, have him tear up the competition, have him work from the bottom up, you know, in about 4 months' time. By the time you get around Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, you could start elevating him into WrestleMania season and give him a big match at WrestleMania 33 like he deserves. And, you know, to touch on the women, because I know I didn't really touch on the women. I know Bayley, she'll be coming up eventually. I know a lot of fans have been asking, you know, about Bayley, and I've seen comments about Bayley, and, you know, like, when is she coming up? Well, I'll explain that Bayley is not going to come up till after SummerSlam. I'm going to tell you why. Because if Bayley comes up, Bayley is so over and so many fans love her, that's going to take away, you know, from the spotlight of Charlotte and Sasha. They want to get this rivalry done. They want to give Sasha her moment. Then, you know what? Bring Bayley up. Have Bayley and Sasha all over again. Your women's division set. At that point, your women's division set. Hold off on Bayley. Don't rush her up. Let Charlotte and Sasha do their thing. After SummerSlam, Sasha will have her moment. You call Bayley up, that crowd would erupt in Brooklyn the night after SummerSlam for Raw. Oh my God, if they would hear Bayley's music. Because, honestly, to me, even though Sasha is my favorite on the roster, I do gotta admit that Bayley seems to me like she's the John Cena of the women. Like, she is so over right now, like John Cena was when he first broke in, and, you know, she's gonna skyrocket. Bayley will skyrocket to the top.
Well, buddy, I got a great edition of this day in wrestling history. If you're ready for that, I am.
Well, let's see what you got, my friend.
Well, let's kick it off. This day in wrestling history, June 28th, as God as my witness, he is broken in half.
No way.
Eddie Mack of CageSideSeats.com reports the following. June 28th, a date that will live in wrestling history as one of the most hardcore of all time. Can you imagine that it has already been 18 years ago today, it's legal. Finally, the WWF presented King of the Ring, and you could watch it on the WWE Network as well if you want to see what we're talking about. I'm sure you've seen it 100 times, so if you're listening to this podcast. From the Civic Arena in camera blacked out there. In beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, United States of America, 17,087 people were in attendance with 310,000 homes watching in shock on pay-per-view. What a night. The event is famously and infamously noted for Mick Foley, then wrestling as Mankind, thrown off the Hell in a Cell cage, changing the world of wrestling as we know it forever and ever. whether it be for good, whether it be for bad, that's up for you to decide on your own. And then that wasn't it. He was then chokeslammed through the cage as well, as if that wasn't bad enough. 10 minutes later, the match, arguably the defining moment of the Attitude Era, as recapped by Gino Marasco in 2013. Here we go with a little commentary. Never. That's way too long, but I will give you the sums up. The sums up is the bout was voted match of the year by Pro Wrestling Illustrated and finished second in the same category by Wrestling Observer Newsletter. It finished second. What on God's earth could Wrestling Observer Newsletter had picked as first? That's the bigger story there.
I was going to say, is there any way when you're done with this, I don't mean to interrupt, but is there any way possible, now that this ties into it, that is there possible to research what Wrestling Observer Newsletter picked for number one in 1998? Because for God's sakes, I would love to know. That's ridiculous.
I guess it's probably listed somewhere online, I'm sure. You know, everyone has the ability to find that out. We'll report on that as soon as we find it. The two falls were selected in a 2011 list as the biggest oh my god incident in WWE history. And as if that wasn't great enough, we also had the King of the Ring semifinals where King Ken Shamrock defeated Jeff Jarrett by submission, and The Rock defeated Dan Severn. And then in the King of the Rings finals, Ken Shamrock defeated The Rock by submission with Triple H on commentary, who also announced that he was bisexual, essentially, in that commentary rant to win the King of the Ring tournament. So Ken Shamrock won the King of the Ring, and Triple H came out of the closet as bisexual. Joke, joke. But what are you going to do? I'm sure everyone remembers that. You know, Triple H made a little joke like, what are you, bilingual? And he's like, I'm a lot of bi things, but bilingual is not one of them. And it was the most awkward silence on commentary of all time. And Triple H then goes, wait, did I just say that? And Jim Ross likes, I believe you did, and it's live, so we're going to continue. That was hysterical. This whole pay-per-view, what a great show. Just never a dull moment. We had the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, and Taka Michinoku defeat Kai and Tai Funaki, Men's Taiyo, and Dick Togo. Too Much, Brian Christopher, and Scott Taylor, also known as Too Cool. They defeated Al Snow and Head. Jerry Lawler was the special guest referee, of course.
Jerry Lawler, actually, I got a funny part about that match I'd like to say. Jerry Lawler actually put a bottle of Head and Shoulders.
Yeah.
On the head, so the head would have shoulders, and then pin the head.
That was hysterical.
Which Brian Christopher is Jerry Lawler's real life son. Lawler.
And we had X-Pac, who defeated Owen Hart, which I think is complete garbage. That's the worst part of the show right there. X-Pac should not be getting a win over Owen Hart in any stretch of the imagination. And the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, they defeated the New Midnight Express, Bombastic Bob, and Bodacious Bart to retain the WWF Tag Team Championships. The Undertaker, well, we all know what happened there. He defeated Mankind in a Hell in a Cell match. And then Kane defeated Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, in a first blood match to win the WWF Championship. Per pre-match stipulation, had Kane lost, he would have had to set himself on fire. And also, by the way, the Hell in a Cell was lowered for the Stone Cold match as well. And Mankind somehow came back from the dead and helped in that match. It was just an absolutely insane night. But 17 years ago on Raw, it's War from Charlotte, North Carolina, WWE link, you can watch it there. Stone Cold Steve Austin defeated The Undertaker to win the WWF Championship. The win made Austin just the third man to win the WWF Championship four times at that point in history. And 7 years ago today, WWE presented The Bash live from the Arco Arena in Sacramento, California. It seems like Randy Orton defeated Triple H in a two to one in a three stages of hell match to retain the WWE Championship. Orton won the first fall via DQ, but lost the second fall less than 2 minutes later in a Falls Count Anywhere match, and Orton won the deciding fall in a stretcher match. So, yeah, what we had in history. And also on a sadder note, though, 3 years ago today, Matthew Wade Osborne, who had his biggest success as one of the most original and memorable characters of the pre-Attitude Era, Doink the Clown, was found dead in his apartment in Plano, Texas, at the age of 55. So special shout-out and RIP to Doink the Clown. Thank you for the memories and for all your contributions to the business. We salute you. Doink the Clown, honk, honk. Pull my finger, but ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to do it tonight. I hope you do it too. Sit back, watch the WWE Network, and go ahead 18 years back in time and watch Hell in the Cell number 2 and King of the Ring 1998. You will not be surprised. I mean, you will not be disappointed.
Well, I got to tell you, bro.
You'll be surprised, but.
Oh, yeah.
It surprises me every time, and I think I've watched that one more than any other show on the entire network.
Especially if you haven't seen it yet on the network, or you're a new subscriber, haven't got around to it yet, trust me, you gotta get around to that show. That is incredible. An incredible, incredible show. Man.
Pittsburgh's the best.
Oh yeah. One of the neighboring cities from me, like a couple hours away, and man, I'll tell you. I watched that show for the first time. I actually bought the home video because I didn't see it live. I bought the home video like back in the year 2000, I believe. And I seen it for the first time and I was so hooked.
Man, imagine like if you were, a wrestling fan that grew up like in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll buy a pay-per-view because I haven't watched it in so long. And imagine like you were just sitting down live watching this pay-per-view live 18 years ago today. Imagine the energy and like the history that you witnessed there and the confusion I'm sure as many wrestling fans had. Like you've never seen anything remotely close to the insanity that was that pay-per-view.
No, you're definitely right on that. I mean, Shane McMahon and The Undertaker was a phenomenal Hell in a Cell match, with a great oh my god moment. But that Hell in a Cell match, King of the Ring 98 with Mankind and The Undertaker, that was like the originator. That's what gave you, like all the future oh my god moments and, the high spots and everything that, we're so used to today. That was like the first huge one that was pulled off. Mick Foley, definitely the originator of that, taking incredible bumps, getting thrown off the cell, getting chokeslammed through the cell, getting dropped on his back on thumbtacks, when he was on the Undertaker's back with the mandible claw on him. And then after taking one hit on the tacks, Undertaker gets up and chokeslams him on the tacks. So that's a second bump in the tacks. Then after that, he gets up, and then Undertaker hits a tombstone. I mean, remember all the tags that were sticking in Mankind's boots, his tights, his shirt? I mean, wow. And even Terry Funk at one point got chokeslammed out of his shoes. Do you remember that?
Nope.
Undertaker picked him up, chokeslammed him, and next thing you know, you see Terry Funk's shoes just laying on the mat. I'm like, wow. Wow. And Terry Funk at that point was what, like in his mid-50s, I believe? Mid-50s at that point? I don't think he was late-50s yet. I think mid-50s. And to take a vicious choke slam out of his shoes like that. What an incredible moment in wrestling history. And, it's like I really wish that, I know we can never have the Attitude Era back, but it's like I really wish that we could recapture something like it. Because that was really the golden era of professional wrestling. In my view, that's what, you know, that's what I grew up with. Like, I'm an Attitude Era person at heart. Are you more for Attitude Era or Ruthless Aggression, Sean?
That's a great question. I stopped watching Ruthless Aggression.
Oh yeah, that's right. You stopped watching like 2 years in. So yeah, definitely Attitude Era for you. And I know what hurt you in the Ruthless Aggression era was the draft and see they're coming back to this again. Ah, it's like everything just comes back to that draft, Sean. Everything. It's like everything comes back full circle to that. And I'm going to keep racking my brains, you know, trying to figure it out. I'll probably never have a clear-cut answer as to why. Maybe when the draft finally takes place, you know, maybe I'll get, you know, more of a sense, but I don't know. We'll just have to see how it, you know, how it lays out, how they draft it, how things happen. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, but I really hope that our schedules will work out to where we can be on live when that history-making event happens, because that's going to be a big one.
All right, buddy. Let's see what EC3 has to say about it.
Yeah. It's about that time, ladies and gentlemen. And I just want to tell you before we sign off here, you know, make sure you like this video, comment on it, and subscribe on YouTube, because we have the video podcast, you know, of this on YouTube. If you're listening to it on iTunes or Podomatic, any of the podcast things, make sure you download it. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you leave that 5-star rating. If you subscribe, you know, like I said, it greatly helps out my YouTube channel. You subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, greatly helps out the podcast. It's all free. It doesn't cost you anything. So please subscribe right now. Check out my website, like Sean said earlier, www.beyondtheringwithbigt.com. All that good stuff. You know what? We may not have thousands of subscribers yet or anything like that, but I will tell you sincerely from the bottom of my heart that what Sean and I do here on this channel, this is your number one destination for WWE talk. It's not about subscriber count numbers. It's not about anything like that. We truly will give you the best content possible. And, you know, we do the best job on here. We really, really do. And we will tell it like it is from the heart. And we're basically not going to be these guys, you know, like some of them, how they just get down on their knees and suck WWE cock. I mean, you know, that's just not how it is. We're going to give you this shit, you know, honest, truthful, the way it's supposed to be. And that's what makes us the number one channel on YouTube for professional wrestling needs, the number one podcast for professional wrestling needs, and what makes my website the number one professional wrestling website for all of your professional wrestling needs. Sean, before we check out, do you want to check out what Wrestling Observer rated number one in 98?
I guess I could.
If it pops up, because I know we started at about like 9:05, so it got, you know, a couple minutes. If it could be pulled up, I'm so curious, because how could anybody put the Hell in a Cell match at number two? And the Wrestling Observer newsletter is Dave Meltzer's, you know, thing, for God's sake. So Meltzer basically voted at number two? Really? What was better in 1998? I wish that, and hope that there's an answer there, because that is confusing. That really confuses me. That left me like this. When you told me, I'm just here scratching my head, like, what? Meltzer, man.
According to this, it was match of the year in both 1998 and 1999. Kenta Kobashi versus Mitsuharu Misawa of All Japan Pro Wrestling from Tokyo, Japan, October 31st, 1998, and they also won it for their match in Tokyo, Japan, June 11th, 1999. So they had back-to-back match of the year, those two. But the match in 97 was Bret Hart versus Stone Cold submission match at WrestleMania 13. So according to Wrestling Observer, Kenta Kobashi and Mitsuharu Misawa had a better match than The Undertaker. So that had to be an incredible match.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't judge on it. I'd have to see it for myself, but I don't know. It had to be something if it's going to be voted number one, because I would have bet the farm. I would have bet everything I own that Taker and Mankind was number one on all platforms there. That really left me shocked, man. That really did leave me shocked. I mean, I know Japan though has, you know, great wrestling. They have a very rich wrestling heritage. Misawa, I'm not sure if he's still wrestling in Japan. He might be. Now, Kenta Kobashi, I'm not really familiar with Kenta Kobashi. Is that Kenta who is Hideo Itami in NXT now? I don't think so. What's he really wrestling? No. Cause he seems like, I'll have to look that up. I'm sorry, I gotta brush up on, more of the Japanese culture, you know, of wrestling, but I don't know if that's Kenta, who's now known as Hideo Itami in NXT, but I wouldn't think so, because isn't Hideo Itami still kind of younger? I don't think he's been wrestling for 18 years already.
No clue, buddy, but hey, I just wanted to say thanks again for having me, and again, happy birthday to my mom. I love you if you ever see this, which I highly doubt. But if you do, happy birthday. And I'm still very jealous your birthday falls on King of the Ring 98 day, but all the better. Love you. Happy birthday. And Big T, thank you again for having me, buddy. And until next week, I hope everyone has a great week. And thanks again for tuning in. And like, subscribe, do all the stuff Big T told you. But yeah, tune in next week. We will be here. One step closer to Battleground and one step closer to the Cruiserweight Classic. July is going to be a great and interesting month. And wrapping up June, it was a great month. And, you know, we kicked off the show at the end of May. And now here we are already at the end of June. So July should be great and interesting, to say the least. A big month coming up with the draft, changing the trajectory of the business as we know it. Stay tuned. We're going to be here covering it for you all. And again, thank you, Big T, for having me. Peace out. We will see you guys next week.
Hey, you know, I'm very glad to have you here, and happy birthday to your mom. And, you know, I don't know if you ever noticed that her birthday was on King of the Ring 98 day, oh, but yeah.
I definitely did.
But man, what an incredible birthday. Happy birthday to your mom again. And, you know, yeah, July's going to be an interesting month, as Sean said. You know, I look back on the podcast when we started on May 25th. My YouTube channel started on March 25th, 2014, and a little over 2 years later, 2 years and 2 months exactly to the day we started this podcast, and it's been rolling. And I really appreciate all of your support, and I love you guys to death. Like Sean said, we're definitely going to be back next week. Now, I don't know if it's going to be on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but we'll figure something out when we're going to be on here. But we'll definitely be back next week to give you, you know, a lot more great wrestling content here. And, you know, we're just chugging along, having fun, and I really hope that you guys are enjoying the ride as much as we are. And you know what? You guys have been watching this podcast, you know, over the last month, and you see what we do and how we close out this wonderful show every single week. Got my buddy friend of the show, Mr. EC3, to, you know, give us the good old close out here. And again, I couldn't thank EC3 enough for this wonderful, you know, intro for my YouTube show and this awesome close out for the podcast. EC3, you're the man, you're the best. And to everybody here that's been watching tonight, it's a little different for me. I'm outside enjoying the summer weather and just had a lot of fun tonight. So thank you all for joining, and thank you, Sean, for being here. And definitely had a great time. Like Sean said, like this video, comment, and subscribe on YouTube. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Podomatic, all that good stuff. All the info's down below where you need it. Check out our Monday Night Raw live review results and commentary that we did last night. I'll have that link down below. So many good things here. And right now, people, right now, I'm getting everything set up to sign us out. So bear with me one second. But in closing, I'd just like to say, you know, anything, if you have any questions on this, make sure you leave your comments and all that good stuff. And, you know, like I said, we'll definitely be back on with you sometime next week. So things are just really rolling here. And let's see. Trying to get the screen share to work. Hold on. All right. For some reason, this happened with me one time trying to close this out, and it wanted to be stubborn with me. But I'll tell you, just while I'm getting this set up, I met EC3 a few times. You know, had the pleasure of meeting him again at an AIW event here in Cleveland. And EC3 is just simply one of the best, most down-to-earth people that you'd ever want to meet in the wrestling business. He's a fantastic guy, and he really appreciates his fans. He really does. And, you know, you couldn't really ask for a better guy in and out of the ring to represent the show. I'll tell you that. EC3 is definitely one class act dude. All right, here we go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to turn it over right now to Mr. EC3. There he is, as you see him on the screen. And he is going to sign us out of this incredible Beyond the Ring with Big T podcast this week. Stay tuned for next week's episode, and we will see you here next week. And like I said, hope you enjoyed it, and I love you all. Happy birthday to Sean's mom again. And check out King of the Ring 98 on the network tonight and go back in time, like Sean said. But right now I'm going to turn it over to Mr. EC3, Ethan Carter III, two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, to close out the show. So hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We will see you next week. And if you want to tune in to me on YouTube, I will be here Thursday night with the SmackDown review and results, WWE Thursday and SmackDown review and results. So you can watch that there. And we'll see you next week on the podcast, the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And have a great night and have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody. Here is Mr. EC3 signing us out. Good night, everybody.
Hello, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T